This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Damocles. He is a synthwave artist based out of Sweden. Damocles, it's great talking to you.
It's great being here. Thank you.
So, you sent me your background information. A lot of the artists in the whole sort of a synthwave scene are relatively young. But you were telling me you've been a DJ and artist since the late 70s?
Yes, correct. I started off in 1979, and I was there when the synthwave hit the world, as it were, the synth pop era, as it were. So, I've been around.
Who are some of your earliest inspirations?
On the synth scene?
I guess in the synth scene and in general.
Well, my first contact with synths at all was with Hot Butter Popcorn back in, I think, 70... Well, what is it? 71? Very, very early on, anyway. And then Kraftwerk came with Man Machine in 77 and changed the world forever. And that was the same year as Space released its... what was it called? I don't remember the name so well. But anyways, Kraftwerk with Man Machine changed me in very many ways, actually.
And I'm also joined here with J.G. Michael and Sam Kevorkian. Sam or J.G., you want to ask a question?
I was going to ask about... were you influenced at all? I was listening to your song off the, I think it was called the Xenophobia, a tribute to Alien. Could you talk a little bit about your cinematic influences at all?
Oh, well, I've been around to see quite a few movies through the years, and I'm very much into sci-fi and horror, so Alien is just up my alley. So I've seen them all plenty of times, and when the idea came to make an album about Alien, I was all in. Proximity Suspense, well, that came very natural to me because, I mean, at least in the first Alien, you see these guys knowing that there's some kind of monster around, and the only thing they have is this beeping thing in their hand telling them it's getting closer. So that's the idea of the track.
You were also saying you were influenced by Kraftwerk.
Yes, I am indeed. And many, many other bands and things, but Kraftwerk, absolutely, yeah. It's woven into my DNA.
Yeah, I'm a huge Kraftwerk fan. What in particular drew you to Kraftwerk and their sound?
I don't really remember. This was quite a long time ago. I mean, 1977, guys. But I don't know what made me buy the album, but after having done so, I listened to that a quadrillion times, you know, and off that album, The Man Machine, was in particular The Robots, and also The Model, that struck many nerves, as it were. And the albums after that, and the album prior to that as well, Trans-Europa Express is a brilliant piece of work. And there's so much to be said about Kraftwerk, but you know.
How long have you been doing music under the Damocles label?
Well, I actually started off releasing records back in the 80s under the label of Andy Said Okay. Pretty cool name. Until it turned out Americans do not pronounce it that way. They can pronounce it Andy C. O.K. So I changed my mind and didn't release more records under that name. And then I released a few under my own name, Anders Ekström. And then in the middle of the 90s, 97 to be exact, I was kind of in the middle of domain names, as it were, you know, or .com names, and everything was taken already. And I spent an entire evening just checking weird names, and everything was taken until I stumbled upon Damocles with a K, and it was available, so I bought it, not knowing what to do with it. And a year later, I decided to make a temple on the internet on that domain, Damocles.com. It's still there, hidden. And then a couple of years later, well, I needed a name for me as a musician, an artist. And I realized I have this domain name, so why not Damocles? So that's the way that went, as it were. Not so very exciting.
What are some of your top favorite songs of all time?
On the synth scene or totally?
I guess both.
Yesu Don't Go is absolutely up there on the top shelf. The Human League. Don't You Want Me with Human League is absolutely top notch as well. Blue Monday made a mark. And there's so many.
Was there a point in your life when you dreamed of making it big? And you were saying that you kind of come to a sort of realization that you just make music for the passion for the music, or was there a time in your life when you were dreaming of making it big as an artist?
Oh, yes, I was dreaming of that. I suppose all artists dream about that. But after a while, you come to realize that you're not really going to. So then you have to try to find a new source of fuel for your creation, as it were. And I started to try to make music for just me, but that didn't really work out very well. So when the internet started to give you the opportunity to reach people on the entire planet through social networks, that's when it really took off for me. I was making music for me alone for a while, but I suppose that was in 2007. I went on to SoundCloud, I believe, maybe 2006. I don't remember, but that's when I started to be able to reach people on the planet, and that was very satisfying.
And was this before the whole sort of new retro wave scene got started? I think that was around, was that around 2010, or was there prior to that?
I think it was before, yes. Then slowly but surely, I got dragged into the midst of that movement. And it's a very interesting movement because the artists themselves over the entire planet are making this movement work, and the fans as well. But it's without the force of huge corporations, which is brand new.
It is new music inspired by the 80s synth sound. How would you say it's different than the original 80s sound?
Well, back in the day, a majority of the tracks released were vocals. Today, I would say a majority are instrumentals. And I would say that the reason for that is that most composers today actually have drawn their inspiration from computer games with instrumental music. So I think that's the main difference.
And as far as influences go, you also have influence from a wide range of genre, from rock to reggae to classical music.
Oh, yes. I was a DJ for like 7-8 years. Back in the day, a DJ was supposed to know everything about music. So we actually played a very wide range of music, spanning from slow tracks, reggae, to rock, heavy rock, heavy rock for the day, to be exact, and funk and disco and synth pop. So you grew to love a lot of different genres.
And I noticed there are some similarities between synthwave and classical music in the sense there's more kind of pop music, which could include 80s pop as well, where the vocals come on immediately. But I would say where there's an overlap with classical music is in synthwave, there's this gradual buildup from basically the beginning of the song to about 1 minute through.
Yes, That's an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, I would say that. But then again, classical music had very distinct melodies, and much of the synthwave music have not so much melody, according to me. I tend to make melodies very much, but a lot of synthwave music is more a chord progression, as it were. Do you see my point?
Since you were performing back in the 80s, have you had people say that your music sounds closer to the original 80s sound than other younger retrowave artists?
Yes, but I don't try to. It just ends up being that way, because I think I grew to love the sound of the machines back in the 80s. So when I make music today, that's what I kind of gravitate to. And I think maybe that makes it more pure, rather than trying to copying a sound. I just make it without trying to copy anything. It's just a preference, as it were.
And going back to when you were a DJ, you got started, so you used synths, drum machines, and digital delays. Those were all part of your act?
Yes, I did that very early on. It came very natural to me, being a musician and a synth artist, as it were, back in the day. It felt very natural to bring it on to a part of my show. So I brought on drum machines and synthesizers and digital sampler delays and stuff like that. I wouldn't say that the audience understood very much of what I was doing back in the day. That came later. But it was a lot of fun for me as a DJ to do it. But then again, there were occasions, there was a guy coming up to me and dragged me away from the machines where I was doing something live. I want
a beer. Why did it go so silent all over a sudden?
I think today DJs get a lot more cred, as it were, than we did back in the day. We have DJ superstars today. That was not heard of back when I was a DJ. I think it was a lot, much more for me than for the audience I did it.
You were a DJ from 81 to 88. Would you say 88 was sort of the end of the new wave era?
Well, I was actually a DJ from 79 to 88, but it could be. I'm not sure. I had different reasons for stopping being a DJ, one of them being that the CD was making its entrance, and I didn't really like that. So when the vinyls saw their end, I thought it a good idea to make my exit. And I was a bit tired of it as well, not getting all that much credit, as I said. But if it was the end of New Wave, I'm not certain. I think New Wave kind of phased out rather than died.
What genre of music replaced it? Like, say, that was most popular in that era, kind of from, say, 88 to 90?
Well, house music saw its beginning at the end of the 80s, and that was also what went through the 90s. So, and grunge made its entrance as well. So, there are so many different incarnations of the music. It's the same music, but it evolved, if you will, into the music you hear today. But the experimentation that was very much the foundation of music of the 80s kind of faded away as well into a format cloning kind of music, where everybody starts to do what everybody was doing. What I love about the 80s is that it was so many different styles being born, so much interesting music being made due to the fact that people were experimenting what could be done with synthesizers. And I think that experimentation, rather than new wave, is what died out and became kind of a stereotype kind of way of making music. So I try to still experiment with synthesizers, see what you can achieve with them.
So after you were a DJ in the 80s, you had a career as a piano bar entertainer.
Yeah.
What genres of music did you play? Was this more classical or pop music?
It was a lot of everything, really. I made the decision to make a repertoire of songs that I loved enough to be able to play them a million times. So it spanned across the entire scene, including actually synth pop tracks like Don't Go and Kraftwerk, the Model was also on my repertoire. And but then it was a lot of rock and roll, blues, and stuff like that. So,
can you talk about the illustrations you use for your album covers? Do you design them, or do you have an artist design them for you?
This album, Time Machine, I designed that. And I had an artist create the design for the single that was released this summer, Retro, whatever it's called. I kind of forget the names of my own tracks, that's a shame. Retronomic Time Adventure, that's the name of it. I have done most of the design for most of my records, actually, yes.
Where do you get the inspiration from the designs? I know Time Machine has a Back to the Future reference, and there's a DeLorean.
Yeah, the DeLorean is kind of a need to have when you make an album about time travel, I think. 14 tracks about time travel needs to have a DeLorean on the front. I actually tried to make it happen to have the music video include a DeLorean. I got to know this guy who owned one, but as it turned out, we couldn't make it because it wasn't in good shape, the car. But anyways, I tried to get inspired by the music I've made. My music kind of talks for itself, tells me what it's supposed to be about, tells me its name, and it also gives me images. So I go with those images and try to make something look good out of it.
I was just wondering if you could extrapolate, since we were talking about time machines, just the sci-fi influence on your music and why it fascinates you so much.
Well, I think time travel fascinates everyone. Are we talking about my fascination for time travel or
just
science fiction?
Sci-fi in general.
Well, in a way, I've always felt that I've been born too early. So sci-fi has given me a glimpse of where I was supposed to be, I guess, out in space in a starship. But sci-fi, if it's good sci-fi, not science fiction that has no science in the fiction, as it were. But good sci-fi is exciting because it gives you a vision of what is to come or what might be. Like in The Terminator, it's probably not a desirable future for humans, but it is very thought-worthy. I mean, like, it could happen.
What are your thoughts on the whole 80s retro-futuristic aesthetic?
I think it's very cool, but as in many cases, it has become rather stereotype. With mostly the same elements reoccurring. As you also can see on the single I released this summer, you have very distinct elements. Like the Chrome logo with a sun in the background. The sun is kind of designed in a particular way. You know what I'm talking about. And
sun with the crosses yes, through it. That one.
Exactly. And then you have the early 3D grid kind of environment. You have certain elements that kind of brings the aesthetic together. But if you overuse it, you probably will kill the image of it, I think.
Back in the 80s, did you think that the future, say today, would actually look that way?
That's a good question. I think that the future would have been... I saw that the future would have been a lot better than what we see today, because what you tend to forget when you look into the future is that people will probably remain the same. If you look in the Star Trek future, for instance, there is global peace on Earth and everything like that. I don't see much of it in the actual present. So, but then again, some things became a lot better. Like you have a piece of glass in your hand today called a smartphone, giving you access to all the information on the entire planet with the speed of light. And you can communicate with people on the entire planet and have them in view in full motion. And that is a lot better than the futures that were visionized in sci-fi back in the day. If you look in the computers on the first Alien film, for instance, you absolutely have the aesthetics of synthwave in the graphs on the computer with those outlined 3D kind of environments. But today, a computer would give you a very, very realistic 3D view rather than just a sketched outlined version. So computers have become a lot more powerful than we could imagine back in the day.
So since we're talking about the future now, what do you think the future will look like 10 or 20 years from now as compared to when you started out?
Well, there are many forces at work. One of them being us being so very dependent on being online. So I see that we will probably have surgical things implanted to make us being online 24/7 without having a gadget in our hand. I think that's inevitable. And what happens then is that we start to become cyborgs in a way. At the same time, we also have different kind of implants. That started off for handicapped people of different walks of life. If you lose a leg, for instance, it's good if you can have a robotic leg implanted. But then when people start realizing they can enhance their body and make them better than a supposed God designed us, then that will happen as well. So both our brains and our bodies will be enhanced, and it's happening today. People have actually started to have implants, giving them access to walk through a door or what have you, already right now. So the Google glasses or goggles gives us a different view on the world with information and directly in front of our eyes about what we're looking at. The history of a person we just meet comes up, and what building we're looking at we get the information just by looking at things. So I think cyborgs, that's what we are becoming very fast.
I don't know if you guys asked this question yet, but what do you think is the future of synth music or electronic music in general?
Well, many people say that synthwave is dead. I don't think it is. But I can understand where people are coming from saying it, because I think that we are kind of killing our own enthusiasm about it by just going on and on and on about it. But what we can see is that more and more countries are getting interested in it, and it's getting close to mainstreaming in many ways. You can hear influences of synthwave entering into mainstream.
Especially in TV shows and film.
Absolutely. I think that people are actually so bored with the contemporary music being house music and what have you, that they are very in the need of something new, be that something retro in this case, but something different than what mainstream has been for a while. So I think synthwave has a bright future. Now, synthwave is a very broad label, including so many different subcategories. Maybe people tend to think of outrun music when they say synthwave, but for me, synthwave is actually a label for all the different styles that I'm doing and more. So maybe we will see, just as Outrun has had a label come onto it, maybe we'll have different sub-labels for all the different styles. But synthwave music definitely has a future, according to me.
Are you familiar with industrial music?
Yes, like German inspired techno music. Are we talking about that?
No, more like
KMFDM.
Yeah, bands like that, or more mainstream bands like Nine Inch Nails.
Oh yes, I've listened to both Nine Inch Nails and industrial techno, as it were. So I get my inspiration from the entire spectrum.
Right. Are you familiar with electronic or electronic industrial heavy metal crossover bands like Rammstein?
Absolutely, Rammstein is a very cool band. I like it a lot. There's a lot of power in that, and I suppose the growling gives it an edge. Yes, I love that merge style, if you would call it that.
Do you do vocals for your albums?
Oh yes, all of it.
With the new album, Time Machine, so some of the songs are released now. When is going to be the official release of it? You said there's still some songs that haven't been released yet.
Oh, well, that's a misconception. The album is released. You will find it on Bandcamp in its full extent. But in order to keep people interested, I'm releasing one track a week on SoundCloud. But the album is there if you want to hear it in its entirety.
So you're saying they can purchase it in its entirety, but right now there's the songs up are...
Yeah, they can purchase it on Bandcamp, on Future H's page on Bandcamp, absolutely. And all the tracks are linked there, so you can, if you find one on SoundCloud, you can absolutely find the entire album on Bandcamp through the link. But I think it's a good idea to try to keep people interested by releasing one a week. Good strategy.
What do you think about the whole process of selling music online? Do you think the internet, as you were saying, does it make things more difficult as far as making a profit, or does it make music more accessible, or would you say a combination of both?
Well, let's face it. I would probably never be on one of the major labels. Well, I suppose I could have, but it's a matter of luck. But major labels tend to want to have bands who are shapeable, and I'm not very shapeable. I do my thing. So it's the backside of the coin. The internet has made it possible for people like me to reach a worldwide audience. But there are so many of us trying to do the same thing, so it's very hard to get heard and seen. back in the day, the huge labels controlled what you got to hear on the radio and what you could buy in the store. Today, we are 1 billion composers trying to get our music heard. Sometimes I get the vision that I'm standing, you know, in a crowd in front of a stage, and we're all composers and artists standing there in the crowd trying to get the attention of one person, the fan, on the stage. So it's become a different world in many ways.
There are synthwave labels like New Retrowave. Have you worked with one of those labels, or are you entirely independent?
I'm on Future 80s Records. This is the fourth release on that label.
As far as your fan base goes, are they disproportionately in one country, or are they pretty spread all over the world?
They're very much spread all over the world, the major part being in the US. And actually, Russia is a big part as well. Germany, France, Belgium, Holland, England, and Sweden, and Denmark, the northern part of Europe, is very much my fan base, including the US and Canada, and, well, actually, the entire planet.
We are getting close to the end of the show. Before I wrap things up, do you want to plug your album one more time for the audience in case they're interested in buying it?
Absolutely. For me, the most interesting part is for you to listen to it and enjoying it. It's called Time Machine. It's a 14-track album where all the tracks in different ways are about time travel. Because it's a very interesting topic, and it's always inspired me, so I hope it will inspire you. You can find it on Future 80s Records on Bandcamp. You can find it on my page on SoundCloud, Damocles. So check it out.
Damocles, it's been an excellent show. A big fan of your work. Thanks for being on.
Thank you for having me.
And also, thank you, Sam Kevorkian and JJ Michael.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Robert.